Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series, a service of the American Institute of CPAs and the Chartered Institute of Management Accountants. This series features discussions with Chartered Global Management Accountants and other experts about the topics, trends, and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series. I'm Editorial Director Jack Hagel. In today's episode, we'll talk with Jack McCulloch about the Chief Financial Officer's evolving role in managing innovation and risk. Jack is the founder of the CFO Leadership Council, which provides professional development for Chief Financial Officers across the United States. Jack is a certified public accountant, and he's the founder of the MIT Sloan CFO Summit, which is where he joined us this month.
Jack, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Innovation is critical to any company's survival. What is the role of the CFO in driving innovation today?
Well, they play a dual role. They have, a lot of times it's a supportive role, which is really to support the founder's vision or the CEO's vision, as opposed to the old school role where the CFO, maybe in the old days, used to just sort of say, no, we can't do that because it's new and different. CFOs today are expected to really understand the business model, add some value to the process, and support it. They're probably not required to come up with the business model, but once they're on board, they're supposed to be a part of it. There was the first CFO I ever knew. He didn't know it at the time, and I hope he's not listening, but people called him the CF No, because it was sort of like anytime we wanted to try something a little different, the answer was, no, we can't do that. No one else has ever done it. And you know, now people say, yeah, no one else has ever done it. That's the point. So the role has really changed dramatically during the course of my career.
I suspect CFOs can be sort of in an uncomfortable middle seat. You know, while they're rarely expected to be the originators of a breakthrough product or technology, they're certainly expected to contribute to an environment that ensures great ideas are spotted, encouraged, financed, and delivered efficiently to the market. So how has the CFO relationship with innovation changed in recent years, and what's driven that change?
Sure. Well, it's an interesting observation that you made, because CFOs tend to... you know, a lot of them majored in either accounting or finance. So as you might imagine, people who are naturally risk takers aren't likely to major in those two fields of study. So they're often thrown in a role where they're expected to be innovators and, if not lead the innovation, at least strongly support it and understand it. And that's the biggest change. The most successful CFOs are the ones who embrace innovation, lead innovation when appropriate. And, you know, the old school bean counter, that's kind of a thing of the past. And it's interesting, you know, I was a CFO that typical path is often a controller is promoted to the CFO. To be kind, I was a mediocre controller, but I was actually a very good CFO because I embraced innovation. You know, I loved new business models and sort of looking for new ways to do things. And as odd as it sounds, you know, you could have found 10,000 better controllers in Massachusetts, but I was actually a pretty good CFO, oddly enough.
In many companies, the CFO's role has been focused on slashing costs in recent years with the downturn. So how can finance sort of shake the perception that it stifles ideas and stops innovation in its tracks? And how can they be seen more as a business partner? What can the CFO do to sort of change that perception?
Yeah, it's no longer an option to have that mentality if you want to be a CFO. You can't go in and just sort of focus only on lowering costs. You won't have a very successful career in a CFO, at least not in most companies. So you need to proactively communicate with your fellow executives and other people. You know, one of the things I always did is I would always talk to the engineers when I usually worked in technology companies. And I certainly didn't understand the coding that they did, that they were doing. They tried to explain it to me. It went right over my head. But I was really trying to understand what it is they were doing, what the product was that they were creating, and really, as best I could, understand the underlying business. And I felt if I educated myself on those things, I could make, you know, really good decisions. And P.S., if there was ever a time that I had to say no, I was a lot more credible doing it. If you just say no, 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 people kind of tune you out. But if you're usually supportive of the mission, when the moment comes that you can't be, we can't take this on, all of a sudden people are listening because, gee, we lost the CFO. Okay, what's he or she have to say? So, but it's really about proactivity and listening to people and understanding your company's business model.
And it sounds like getting out of that silo and getting onto the factory floor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I never worked in a company that had a literal factory, but it is, you know, truly getting to understand what everybody in the company does. You know, what does marketing do? Why is their communication style important? How can you support that message? You know, what is the sales process all about? And by the way, a lot of CFOs I know are actually the best salespeople in their companies. And the reason is we're highly credible as a group. I mean, you know, we're expected to be the most honest people in the company. So if you bring the CFO on a sales call, you know, he or she is just going to bring a whole lot of credibility to that process.
So how can a CFO encourage an innovative mindset across the organization? You know, it's one thing to get out of your silo and go ask questions, but it's another thing to manage a finance team. So what are the things that a CFO can do to get the whole organization thinking in an innovative way down from the factory floor up to the C-suite?
Well, you know, she needs to be innovative herself and communicate the innovation and just be a true leader and make sure that people across all the functions within a company understand that. It's easier to do today than it ever was because of modern communications. You know, if you're in a global presence, you know, it's remarkable that people who've never met you think that they know you. But sort of a lot of communication, be not only willing to accept risk, but actually maybe push it a little bit within reasonable boundaries. You know, someone does have to sort of do the checks and balances thing, and that often follows to finance and human resources. But sort of put yourself out there as a risk taker. You know, if somebody, maybe one of your colleagues says, we don't want to go to the Latin American market, for example, ask why not. You know, I mean, maybe embrace the Latin American market, do your homework, and convince people that maybe there's an opportunity there. Even if you lose the battle, it might change the perception that people have of you.
How can CFOs better manage short-term demands of investors while still helping the company focus on innovations that may be years from coming to market?
That's a great question. And sometimes it's a matter of just having the right investors in your company and communicating that, hey, we're in for the long run. The life science industry started in the 1960s at MIT, and the goal was not about profit. And, you know, eventually private companies started making lots of money in the 1990s. But no corporation could have taken that on, that the ROI was too long down the road. And no one, a CFO would be laughed out of the room if she said 30 years until, you know, we get an ROI. But you do need to explain, you know, this might take a few years. We're truly trying to change the world here or change a business segment. And those types of things don't happen overnight, but the reward can be phenomenal. So, you know, a lot of people might have seen a company like Uber, a game changer. You know, I'm sure there are some investors that probably just rolled their eyes at it and said, why, cabs work fine. But, you know, you sort of need to express what the business model is and why it's important and why it's going to take time to come to fruition.
You mentioned Uber. I'd like to talk about startups. Historically, what has the role of the finance professional been in startups, and is it changing? And if so, how?
Yeah, I mean, it's done quite a lot of change in the last decade. It used to be just kind of a record keeper. You'd be shocked at how many companies would just, you know, a company would be started by a garage in a garage by the founder, and he'd have his, you know, sister or his wife, who had no accounting background, keep the books and records. And maybe that was okay in that time. But now that finance is seen as a little bit more strategic and more helpful in raising capital, and deploying the capital as appropriate, it's more strategic at an earlier time in the company's history, I think is probably the biggest change. There's sort of a cottage industry in a lot of the innovation cities like Silicon Valley and Boston of part-time CFOs, companies that need the expertise of a CFO, but, you know, don't have the capital to pay, you know, $250,000 for one.
You have been a part-time CFO. So what are the benefits or pitfalls associated with renting a CFO? And both from the professional's side, so if you're the CFO, and then also from the company's side.
Yeah, sure. From the company side, there's a few things. There is probably some mixed quality issues. Like a lot of times people will, you know, find themselves in career transition and decide to do a part-time CFO gig, but they're not doing it because they want to be a part-time CFO. They're, you know, trying to pay the mortgage and that type of stuff. And they, you know, tend to, you know, stay 3 months, 6 months and move on to a real job. So if you're going to go that route, it's important you find somebody who actually does it for a living. You can either find it from an independent who's done it for several years or through a firm. So that's a big risk you take. From the individual standpoint, you're aware that I did it for a few years. It was, to me, it's great fun. One of the challenges is you're constantly prospecting because I was a CFO for over 20 different companies. So I was always churning new clients here and there. Now, CFOs aren't naturally good business development people, and they've got this little problem. They're too darn humble, and bragging about themselves is really tough. It's funny. I've known so many of them. They can brag about their company. They can brag about their children, but they cannot bring themselves to boast about themselves. It's just, I don't know. It's just not their comfort zone. So they're not naturally good business developers, and it's an important part of the job.
So what attributes must a startup CFO have, and how should a startup CFO's temperament differ from those at larger, more established companies?
Yeah, it's a different, despite having the same title, it's a very, very different job. And there's been some research that people who are successful at big companies just aren't successful at smaller companies. A lot of times the part-time CFO has nobody to delegate to. So you're literally doing, you know, the basic stuff of monthly bank reconciliations, posting journal entries, things like that, as well as the strategic stuff. And it's a tough tightrope to walk because you actually have to do some of the remedial stuff. I mean, you can't not close the books. You can't not pay the bills and collect money from customers. But at the same point, your inclination is to be strategic, to be on the cutting edge with your investors and your customers and your fellow executives. So it's tough to do. Someone coming from a big company that had a lot of people to delegate that sort of thing, that's a very challenging transition for them. And it goes the other way too. A lot of small company CFOs can't handle the scale.
If you were to leave junior level finance professionals with a piece of advice, people who aspire to be a CFO, maybe some information that you've gleaned over time in your experience, but maybe didn't have early on, what would you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, all goals are different, but I recently worked at KPMG, great place to have a career, as their slogan is. But I would say start your career in public accounting, and particularly with a large firm, because you're exposed to, you know, the most important accounting and finance issues a company will face. You will work with the best clients in the city that you are in, very interesting global or innovative companies, and you're surrounded by smart people who do it for a living. If you go directly to a startup, you're going to have a very junior job, and it's very likely 3 or 4 years later, you'll still have a very junior job. They're small, so there's not a lot of growth and not a lot of things you can expose yourself to. So I'd definitely recommend starting the career in public accounting. You know, the longer you stay, the more marketable you are when you leave.
Jack, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Great to be here, Jack.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.